decades of how we provide oversight with respect to the development of ocean energy needs to have a new look.
The Interior Secretary visits Alaska from the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 3rd of September. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, lining up in Anchorage for a shot at a few seconds of movie stardom.
Just interesting. It's a new experience. It might be fun to see how it works.
Do you have any acting experience?
None.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Interior Secretary Ken Salazar stopped in Anchorage today at the end of a whirlwind 48-hour tour of Alaska's North Slope. He stopped in Barrow, Prudhoe Bay, the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, and flew over the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. Salazar said he wanted to see firsthand some of the areas in the state that will be affected by his department's decisions in the months and years ahead. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
The first order of business for reporters who met with Salazar was clarifying whether the Interior Department's oil and gas drilling moratorium bars oil industry work in Alaska's Arctic Ocean. The answer, at least at first, was yes.
The moratorium does, in fact, apply to Alaska.
But several minutes later, when the question came up again, the Interior Secretary had a different answer.
The way that we prepared the moratorium, it applies to the Gulf of Mexico.
Still confused?
Well, the moratorium on the Arctic essentially is imposed in a different way.
In the end, Salazar clarified that although the Arctic Ocean isn't under the drilling moratorium, it might as well be. That's because the Interior Department shut down drilling in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas this summer after it decided not to allow Shell to drill exploratory wells there. Salazar says it's a very different kind of challenge to develop oil in the Arctic than it is in places like the Gulf of Mexico.
If you look at the Chukchi, nothing or very little is known about the reservoir pressures that will be encountered. We know that it would be very difficult to mount the kind of oil spill response that has been mounted in the Gulf of Mexico. And so because those questions are very much part of what we have been dealing with, it also seemed necessary for us to say until we have answers to some of those central questions, we're not going to allow the drilling of the exploration wells.
The Interior Department will make a decision on whether Shell will be able to drill in the Arctic Ocean next summer after several reports on the Deepwater Horizon blowout have been finalized. But Salazar says he doesn't know if that decision will be made in time for Shell to organize for the summer season in 2011. He says the department needs to know the oil spill containment and response plans are adequate.
It's clear that the Deepwater Horizon has taught the nation, the Congress, and everybody else that 3 decades of how we provide oversight with respect to the development of ocean energy needs to have a new look.
And Salazar didn't seem to think Thursday's oil rig explosion in the Gulf of Mexico would have much of an impact on his decision.
You know, industrial accidents happen, and it was obviously an industrial accident that happened there. And there's an investigation that is underway. Mike Bromwich and BOEM will be leading that investigation, and we'll find out exactly what happened. But, you know, at this point, you know, it doesn't seem like there was any oil that was released out, so the oil pollution is not an issue, and it's not another Deepwater Horizon.
Salazar also addressed ConocoPhillips' interrupted plan to begin oil and gas drilling in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The Army Corps of Engineers denied the company a permit it needed last winter because the potential impact of a set of bridges and a drilling pad in the Colville River Delta. Salazar says he wants to see if the concerns, which came from Fish and Wildlife and EPA, can be addressed.
I don't know whether we will be able to, but I think there is a history with respect to the MPRA that makes makes it worthwhile for me to spend some of my own personal time seeing whether I can bridge the differences there.
Subsistence issues were also on the secretary's agenda in Alaska. He met with Native leaders in Barrow and with representatives from the Alaska Federation of Natives.
Their view is that there has to be a much more robust effort on the part of Interior to make sure that the subsistence rights are being upheld for Alaska Natives.
Salazar says his department has a responsibility to make sure subsistence rights are being honored in Alaska. He says he'll work to make sure any wrinkles in the program are smoothed over. In general, Salazar says he thinks the Interior Department has a positive relationship with Alaska, and he says the issues the department is currently dealing with will no doubt have a huge impact on the state. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate Joe Miller pulled further ahead of incumbent Lisa Murkowski today as the Division of Elections neared the end of the vote-counting process for this year's primary elections. As of airtime, the tally in that race shows Miller ahead by 2,020 votes. So far, more than 109,000 votes have been counted in that race. Murkowski conceded the primary election Tuesday night. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Lisa Murkowski's concession did not carry any statutory weight. The votes would still be counted, and she still could remain in the race. Several options are available to her, and according to those close to her, she has not yet made a decision. She could continue to go up against Joe Miller as a write-in candidate, or as a candidate for another party, or she could endorse one of the candidates already on the ballot. Polls are inconclusive on the subject. The results of the largest polling sample came out shortly after the primary election, and it showed if her name is on the ballot, she would divide the opposition, giving Miller his victory. More recent polls show her pulling votes from undecided Republicans and taking a narrow victory. She certainly has the money to run another campaign. Some of it was left over from the primary campaign. Part of it was donated specifically for a general election attempt. Estimates show that to be about $1 million, and under federal law, some of it would have to be returned if she doesn't run. Those are the basis of the decision she's taking into the Labor Day weekend. The only deadline that might factor in would be with the Division of Elections. They have to know by September 15th if she'll be the choice of another party. The Libertarians have the only spot on the ballot that they could change. There's another decision pending, this one in the Republican gubernatorial campaign. What will Bill Walker do? He left the primary election with about a third of the party's vote, but that's not enough to get action on his primary issue, an all-Alaska gas line from the North Slope to Tidewater for export as liquefied natural gas. Walker has the same options as Murkowski: write-in, third party, or endorsement. And he's still considering each of those. Polls on the subject are as inconclusive as those in the Senate race. Most show a victory for Sean Parnell, but the endorsement option has not yet been tabulated. The Alaska Independence Party has scheduled a meeting of its leadership tonight, where it's expected they'll offer him their place on the ballot. His staff says there's been no commitment to take it, however. The division will spend one more day counting ballots. Next Wednesday marks the deadline for receiving absentee ballots from overseas. Elections Director Gail Funumia says that leaves one final internal task.
The State Review Board will start their work on Tuesday the 7th of going through all precinct materials and absentee and question materials. And after they are done, the election will be certified. And after an election is certified, a defeated candidate or 10 qualified voters has 5 days to request a recount.
Recounts are free in races where the difference between candidates is 0.5%, or if the candidates are separated by fewer than 20 votes. There are two legislative districts that qualify for the no-charge recounts right now, both Republican primaries. The three candidates in District 12 from Valdez North ended election night separated by only 8 votes. As of this afternoon's count, there's a 19-vote difference. The top two District 18 candidates in Eagle River are now separated by only 4 votes, and the results there will have to wait until the final ballot count next week. Although the voting is over and the ballots nearly counted, the primary election is still alive. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
family that rode a bike from Kentucky to Alaska settles into a cabin near Fairbanks.
Somebody donated right here on the wall this oval tub. It's what we're going to bathe in. So we're tickled to death in Fairbanks.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
Prosecutors will wait before deciding whether to appeal the dismissal of a fishing citation against State Senator Albert Kukesh. A judge on Thursday threw out charges alleging Kukesh and three others overfished their subsistence permits while harvesting sockeye salmon last summer. District Attorney Doug Gardner says officials will wait for a written ruling due out in about a week.
I think that decisions to appeal decisions by courts in Alaska are careful and considered decisions that really require looking at a written decision, making a decision based on that. So I can't comment on that right now.
Kukesh and the other defendants, all Angoon residents, argued that the state failed to follow its own rules for setting harvest limits. Lisa Murkowski's defeat in the Republican primary could impact the chances of Sea Alaska's Lance legislation passing. Murkowski was the bill's main backer in Congress, and primary winner Joe Miller has spoken against it. But the other two members of Alaska's congressional delegation say they'll keep the measure in play. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Congressman Don Young introduced the first Sea Alaska bill in 2007. But Lisa Murkowski's office has been doing most of the recent heavy lifting. That's in part because she's the ranking Republican on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, which handles such legislation. In an internet interview earlier this year, Murkowski took the lead in defending the bill against critics.
There's been some, concern that somehow or other Sea Alaska is getting something extra, something that they're not entitled to. And what I think is important to appreciate is the history and the fact that Sea Alaska remains incomplete in terms of their initial conveyances under ANCSA.
Murkowski's narrow primary defeat still leaves her the power to push the measure through in her final months. But Robert Dillon, her Natural Resources Committee spokesman, says that is not in the works.
I'm not aware of any plans to move the bill in the immediate future. There's certainly no plans to rush the bill through until it's finished and ready to go, and at that point would be made public again with any changes.
Murkowski will serve until early January, but Dillon says scheduled recesses leave only about 5 weeks for congressional action. Don Young continues to sponsor a version of the measure. Spokeswoman Meredith Kenney says he's committed to seeing the bill through. He serves on the House Natural Resources Committee, a key panel for the bill, but he no longer holds the leadership post he once had. The third member of Alaska's congressional delegation, Senator Mark Begich, is also a sponsor of Murkowski's legislation.
His goal is to get the bill passed through Congress.
Begich spokeswoman Julie Haskett says he believes in the bill, which would allow Sea Alaska to select approximately 80,000 acres of Tongass National Forest that would be outside boundaries set in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
He continues to support the bill, and whether it's while Senator Murkowski is still in office or after she leaves office, if it hasn't passed by then, Senator Begich will continue to work to get this bill passed.
The chief contenders for Murkowski's Senate seat are less positive about the bill.
It would just create a high degree of, I think, economic impact in a way that would hurt Alaskans.
Republican candidate Joe Miller slammed the legislation as a backdoor deal during the primary. His campaign press staffers have not returned calls about the legislation since the August vote. But in pre-election interviews, he criticized more than the process.
The concern I have is that when you select outside of boundaries, it creates all sorts of uncertainty for private enterprise, other users, other stakeholders that have come to depend on land that no one ever thought would be selected because it wasn't within the ANCSA boundaries. And so I think as a general concern, that is going to create, if we do go that route with this bill, uncertainty throughout the state.
The Democrat in the race is less negative, but far from enthusiastic. Senate candidate Scott McAdams has sat through meetings on the bill as Sitka's mayor, but he would not say whether he'd sign on as a co-sponsor.
I think that the Sea Alaska land bill is a work in progress. You know, I think that as a general rule, putting native lands back into native hands is the right thing to do.
Sea Alaska officials were not available for interviews in time for this report, but spokesman Todd Antioquia sent an email saying, quote, "We are not prepared to speculate, and we will continue to evaluate all our options. We have legislation with bipartisan support, and we will continue working toward passage." Meanwhile, some bill opponents say it's one of the reasons Murkowski lost to Miller. Point Baker resident Don Hernandez, who has campaigned against the measure, says it cost the incumbent votes.
On Prince of Wales Island, I'm sure that there were a good number of people that voted against her, specifically because of this bill. There may have even been a few people switching parties so that they could vote for Joe Miller. It wouldn't surprise me.
An analysis by native law attorney Donald Craig Mitchell, published in the Huffington Post, also suggested the bill could be a factor. Despite the opposition, the incumbent pulled in about 57% of the region's vote, a stronger return than most other parts of the state. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka.
Eroding banks of the Matanuska River are causing stress to some homeowners who live a little too close to the river. About a month ago, a Sutton man lost part of his house to the river, and now residents of the nearby Butte area are worried about potential losses to the rushing waters. They've asked the Matanuska Susitna Borough for help, but Deputy Borough Mayor Lynn Woods says it's more a question of who has the authority to do erosion control work.
The waters of Alaska are under the jurisdiction of the state, and to this date, the only interest the state has is in protecting the public infrastructure or their public facilities, which is the Glen Highway.
Woods says the state, not the borough, has erosion and flood control powers. State and federal dollars are required, and there has to be a cooperative effort between the two entities and with state legislators to get funding. A Matanuska River management plan is scheduled to be aired at an upcoming borough assembly meeting on September 7th. Woods says the plan contains options for managing erosion.
It details the options and what are the possible scenarios for work to be done. So we've done all the groundwork. I guess we just need the state to make a decision on what they're going to do.
Since the early August incident that threatened Riverside Homes, the borough has been monitoring the situation and looking for emergency federal funding to address it. Woods points to work done by the state in the 1980s, which bolstered the riverbank in the threatened area. She says most of that has been washed away, and what remains has not been maintained by the state.
The river erosion has been going on for decades. This is definitely an ongoing issue, and the one thing we know, it will not stop. And the closer it gets to residents, the more urgent the activities become.
Residents have petitioned the borough to fix the damaged levee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender, and by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The search for 1,000 extras for the upcoming film Everybody Loves Whales failed to draw crowds today in Anchorage. 50 to 100 people stood in line at a local mall for tryouts.
Do you want a form?
No, I don't want a form.
Oh, this is extra auditions for the film Everybody Loves Whales.
Asked why she was trying out for a non-speaking part, one woman identified herself as Nair.
Oh, I'm here for the audition for the movie.
Do you think you have a good chance?
As good as anybody else.
Uh-huh.
What do you have to do to audition?
I don't know. They just told me stand here and they'll be taking a couple of pictures, and that's just about as much as I know.
Brothers Aaron and Ben waited patiently for their opportunity.
I think I got as much a chance as anyone else.
But where did you find out about this?
My brother.
Ah.
You want to talk to him?
He's yeah. Right, Ben, and what do you think will happen?
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
We can get lines.
Possibly.
I want a line.
Possibly. That'd be fun. But I saw the thing for about 1,000 extras. Thought I'd come on down.
Do you even remember the incident with the gray whales trapped in the...
I was born in 84. I didn't really know about it. I just read about it yesterday.
And a fellow named Richard said it was just for fun.
Just interesting. It's a new experience. It might be fun to see how it works.
Do you have any acting experience?
None.
Extra hopefuls ranged in age from high school students to the elderly. The process moved quickly. Each applicant was photographed full face and then right and left profile, mugshot style. No word on when finalists will be notified. The extra tryouts continue tomorrow at the Diamond Mall in Anchorage. Alaska has among the worst state-maintained roads in the country, according to a new report that grades the highways and roads across the country. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
A nonprofit think tank called the Reason Foundation has released their annual highway report, which grades the performance of state highway systems. The report puts Alaska's overall rank as 49th in the union. That's an improvement over last year's report when Alaska ranked dead last. David Hartgen is a professor of transportation studies at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and the U.S. editor of the international academic journal, Transportation.
Because each state is different in size, we have to look at how much they have in money relative to how much mileage they're responsible for. In the case of Alaska, it's a modestly sized system. They have about 8,400 miles of responsibility and about a $730 million budget. So they actually have a little bit less money per mile of responsibility to work with than the average state. So from that perspective, essentially they're operating on a fairly thin budget with quite a bit of mileage that's spread out, as you know, over a very large area.
The report ranks states in several different categories. For instance, Alaska ranks 24th in fatalities and 23rd in deficient or functionally obsolete bridges. However, Alaska is ranked just 7th in urban interstate congestion. Something that won't surprise many drivers in rural Alaska is that the state is 50th in rural road conditions. The report finds that in 2008, Alaska reported a fatality rate of 1.27 fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles, which is a significant improvement from the 1.63 fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles in 2007. Cindy Cashin is the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. She says there might be some reasons to explain the drop in the fatality numbers between 2007 and 2008.
There was a big change in the price of oil. We know that people were not on the road. We know for a fact that there were not as many vehicles on the road, and there, that could be for a number of factors, and it could just be bad weather. So we don't just... take a look, like this report does, at a few factors, and we don't look at the difference between 2007 and 2008 and come out, you know, applauding ourselves or predicting doomsday. We don't do either. We look at trends.
In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
A Kentucky family that rode a 5-person bike to Alaska is settling in for the winter in Fairbanks. It's the next phase of the Harrison family adventure that began 13 months and 7,000 miles ago. KUAC's Dan Bross visited Bill and Amarin's Harrison and their 3 young daughters at their wintering spot outside town.
The Harrison's journey has led them to a small cabin with no running water or electricity, many miles of dirt road from Fairbanks.
Hey, you made it, man.
You guys are out here.
Yeah, well, come on in.
Then we might sit outside.
Yeah. This is, say hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, girl.
There's Robin, Jasmine, Cheyenne from youngest to oldest. And this is Amaris.
Hi, Amaris. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
We're a little late with our breakfast.
The family, who go by the nickname Pedowins, like peddling Bedouins, are not wealthy adventurers playing pioneer. They have minimal savings and no health insurance and depend on bartering, odd jobs, and goodwill to get by. Their Fairbanks cabin was offered to them for free, and locals have given the family firewood, winter clothes, and books for the girls who are homeschooled. Bill and Amarin say the Fairbanks community has embraced them.
Great families already that we've connected with and that we can get together with. So of course, if they come and get us, that would be it. Or come and visit here. But, you know, it's just nice to know that we have made connections already. And it's kind of building our own community here.
Yeah, networking. Somebody donate right here on the wall this oval wash, this old tub is what we're going to bathe in. They had just sitting around doing nothing. They said, hey, borrow it, man.
Yeah, so the girls have had a bath in it already.
Yeah, so, you know, we're getting our needs met and giving back to, you know, we've been doing a little work for some of them, too. So, you know, it's kind of give and take. So we're tickled to death with Fairbanks.
The Harrisons were very visible as they pedaled across the country, but are holed up for the winter. They don't have a car, and it would take hours to ride their bike over the hills into town. Bill Harrison says the isolation is by design, given their love of family time and a plan to write a book about their experiences.
Part of the reason of this cabin where it's at is if I was close to town, I'd get to work and I wouldn't write the book. And that's key for us. So we're out here and we're going to put the book together between now and the winter solstice, get the basic shell of it.
Harrison says they'll then turn to some professor friends for editing. They're also in talks with a publisher. He says they hope to have the book ready by the spring when they plan to hit the road again, but not on a bike.
We're going to actually take a bus out of Alaska. I don't think that's ever happened before. Usually they come in. We've got a couple leads on some buses. And then once the basic shell is done around the winter solstice, then we're going to start working on the bus and making it roadworthy. And we're going to mount the bike right to the side of the bus. And then I'm going to build some bunk beds in it, and we're going to head out in probably April or May.
Bill Harrison says they'll have a book signing in Fairbanks and then travel south and around the country selling copies. He calls it part three of the family's journey. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. The Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering online courses from any location. Fall semester starts September 2nd. Information at distance.uaf.edu. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.